Sojourner Truth. Thank you so much for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Slavery still exists in California and indeed in several other states across the United States. But it's not what we generally think of when we hear the word slavery, as in chattel slavery, but it's slavery inside prisons. What we are taught in history books is that slavery was abolished with the 13th Amendment in the United States and was ratified on December 6, 1865. However, this didn't apply to prisoners. Today on Sojourner Truth, we focus on the movement to finally abolish what is known as involuntary slavery in prisons in California and other states. Our guests are Dorsey Nunn, a founder of California Prisoners with Children, and Stanley Thermidor with A New Way of Life. Let us go now to a clip from CNN giving some context.
Critics call it a form of modern-day slavery. California prison inmates doing construction work, computer coding, or working in hospice care, among other jobs. Well, this week in California, the effort to end what critics are calling forced labor is one step closer to being on the November ballot. On Tuesday, it passed out of a key committee. The End Slavery in California Act, or ACA 8, proposes an amendment to the state's constitution in regards to its language on slavery. Currently, Article 1, Section 6 of the state constitution states slavery is prohibited. Involuntary servitude is prohibited except to punish crime. The proposed amendment would simply read slavery in any form is prohibited. If passed, California would join 34 other states which already removed that language from their constitutions, including Alabama, Oregon, Tennessee, and Vermont, which did so in 2022. The California Department of Corrections says every job is dignified and they strive to provide job opportunities and training similar to those outside of prison.
Well, that was the take from Frederica Wilson on CNN. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. Legal experts say the Supreme Court's ruling granting presidents broad immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts Monday will likely derail the federal prosecution of Donald Trump for his efforts to overturn his 2020 election loss. The high court also ruled presidents could be prosecuted for unofficial acts, but imposed a high bar for that prosecution, as Scott Baba reports.
Tom Wolf is the director of Democracy Initiatives at the Brennan Center for Justice in New York, a progressive nonprofit law and public policy institute.
This new ruling from the court pulls a new constitutional rule from thin air. Trump is now positioned to renew his push to dismiss the charges against him and evade accountability for his crimes against our democracy. And as a result, the rule of law in America is in tatters today.
Wolf said that while the court ruled presidents don't have immunity for unofficial acts, official acts could not form the basis for prosecution. The court also ruled that prosecutors are not allowed to look at a president's motives for official acts, no matter how corrupt. Wolf said that the ruling would likely derail special counsel Jack Smith's prosecution of former President Donald Trump.
They've also said that the special prosecutor can't rely on the testimony of the president or any of his aides associated with official acts.
Trump posted in all capital letters on his social media network saying, quote, "Big win for our Constitution and democracy. Proud to be an American." President Joe Biden addressed the nation in response to the ruling.
Today's decision almost certainly means that there are virtually no limits on what a president can do. This is a fundamentally new principle. and it's a dangerous precedent.
I'm Scott Bamba, Pacifica Radio.
Donald Trump's lawyer sent a letter to Manhattan judge in his election interference hush money criminal case Monday night, seeking to file a motion to set aside his guilty verdict. The letter to Judge Juan Mercon cited the Supreme Court's ruling earlier in the day and asked the judge to delay Trump's sentencing while he weighs the high court's decision and how it could influence the New York case. New York progressive Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said on social media she'll file articles of impeachment in the House against the Supreme Court's conservative justices. She said, quote, "The Supreme Court has become consumed by a corruption crisis beyond its control. Today's ruling represents an assault on American democracy. It is up to Congress to defend our nation from this authoritarian capture," unquote. It's likely to go nowhere in the Republican-controlled chamber. Independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders said the Supreme Court is out of control. If these conservative, right-wing, corporate-sponsored justices want to make public policy, they should simply quit the Supreme Court and run for political office, he said. A federal appeals court has restored a more than $2 million fine against two dozen white nationalists and organizations for their role in the deadly 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, North Carolina, where civil rights protesters clashed with far-right and Nazi extremists, culminating in a man plowing his vehicle into a crowd, killing one woman. A jury had awarded more than $26 million in damages to people who had suffered physical or emotional injuries during the event. A judge later slashed that amount. A federal appeals court Monday increased it to $350,000. Each person. Israeli strikes overnight killed at least 9 people in the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis, shortly after Israel ordered Palestinians to evacuate parts of the city ahead of a likely ground operation. The strike hit a home near the European hospital. The United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees says some 250,000 people are in the evacuation zone, many who already fled earlier fighting. Meanwhile, reporting from Al Jazeera shows video of Israel's military using Palestinian detainees as what EuroMed organization calls human shields, dressing them up in Israeli military uniforms, forcing detainees to walk unarmed in combat zones and in search of unexploded ordnances. The military also straps cameras on them. Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor called the tactic a full-fledged war crime. At least 4 people are dead after Hurricane Beryl slammed into the southern Caribbean as a Category 5 hurricane, the first of the year. 3 people were reportedly killed in Grenada, another in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, according to officials. It's now heading near Jamaica, the Cayman Islands, and Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula, where hurricane warnings are in effect. Beryl's the earliest Category 5 storm ever to form in the Atlantic, fueled by record warm waters from climate change. It's expected to start losing intensity today. In a limited ruling, the Supreme Court is keeping on hold social media laws in Texas and Florida that would limit how Facebook, TikTok, X, YouTube, and other platforms regulate content posted by their users, citing the company's First Amendment rights. The court's majority recognized that platforms are like newspapers and have a constitutional right to make choices about what to include and exclude from their spaces. The cases will continue in federal appeals court. One court had upheld the Texas law. Another found Florida's law is probably unconstitutional. Backers of a proposal to change Ohio's congressional map-making system have delivered hundreds of thousands of signatures needed to make the statewide ballot this fall. The group Citizens Not Politicians say they delivered more than 700,000 petition signatures Monday, far more than the 414,000 valid signatures they needed by Wednesday's deadline. The group's amendment aims to replace Ohio's Redistricting Commission with an independent body selected directly by its citizens. The ballot initiative is an effort to thwart GOP-drawn congressional maps. I'm Christina Onnestad reporting for Pacifica Radio.
And those were our news headlines. And today we are going to dig deep into something that likely a lot of you thought was over, no longer existed, with the passage of the 13th Amendment in the United States, which was said to abolish slavery. But it had an exception, those of people who were incarcerated. Now, this is a big deal because, as many of you know, the United States has the largest prison population in the world. This is according to World Prison Brief. Okay. And that includes something like 1,719 state prisons that might have grown by now, about 102 federal prisons, about 901 juvenile correctional facilities, about over 3,000 local jails, 76 Indian County jails, as well as military prisons and immigration detention facilities. But we are going to be focusing now on forced labor. People who are incarcerated being forced to work for, well, practically next to nothing. What I'd like to do is to introduce our guests, Dorsey Nunn, who is a founder of a prisoner rights organization. He is with the LSPC, and Dorsey, you'll spell that out for us, Legal Services for Prisoners with Children. Welcome, Dorsey.
Hey, thank you. And I'm also a co-founder of All of Us Anon. Who's been very active around the question of abolishing involuntary servitude.
Right, and I'll have you talk a little bit more about All of Us Anon. I've been following the work of that organization for quite a while now. I also would like to welcome Stanley Thermidor, who is the policy and advocacy strategist for A New Way of Life. Stanley, welcome.
Thank you.
All righty. So great to have both of you on. We're going to start now with Dorsey. Actually, what we'll do, Dorsey, we'll start actually with both of you, but first with Dorsey, a bit about your background. And if you, Dorsey, have been personally impacted by what they call involuntary servitude, but we're all calling it slavery. Dorsey?
Yeah, I've been impacted by involuntary servitude. Involuntary servitude is just another name for slavery. You're being forced to work, you're being coerced to work, and I assume that they give people in prison pay numbers and work people for pennies an hour. The most money I ever made over the course of 11 years was 32 cents an hour. You know, and then they expect me to get out of prison after serving 11 years, start a new life, and somehow do all of that on $200. You know, in addition to that, the circumstances in which I was forced to labor, probably the most dangerous job is when I was making mixing chemicals to do detergents inside of San Quentin prison while I was on the ranch. And, you know, people don't know that when they're passing through a tunnel that's on a state highway, if they're washing that tunnel down, somebody actually did the compound to actually scrub that tunnel or spray water on it. And one day I was sweeping and I mixed the wrong chemicals. And what started to happen was it started to smoke and actually catch on fire. Wow. At the same time, there was no real protection in terms of appropriate mask that I could wear. There was no appropriate gear that I can protect myself from. And by the way, I think absolutely slavery give labor a bad name and give work a bad name.
Yeah, I'll say that. And Dorsey, those 11 years, was that in California? California prison?
That was in California. You know, like most people that look at the 13th Amendment, before the 13th Amendment was had in the United States, I think in 1849, California did it. You know, they incorporated slavery into the California Constitution before the United States incorporated it. So there's a number of different states that actually start thinking about how do they exploit human beings and use them for slavery. You know, so you know, when you say it, it's not like chattel slavery. However, I think that some things that are real common is that the labor is forced, the labor is coerced, and the labor actually is demanded. And if you go to prison, you are generally expected to work. You can be demanded to work. And the majority of jobs that are in prison is probably jobs that people are doing for absolutely free. You know,
yeah.
So it's not like that they're gonna get out, and you know, and what I think that it did was interrupted my development in terms of I never had a job that I actually worked on inside of a prison that actually gave me any comfort when I got out. I didn't do that trade again. I didn't do participate again like that. And in addition to that, I was flat ass broke. My kids couldn't take advantage of whatever I earned. So it wasn't like they just impacted me. They impacted my two children. They impacted my community, because that labor was stolen and I could have been contributed in a way that I couldn't have contributed if I didn't have money.
Right. And before bringing Stanley into this conversation, I mean, Darcy, some time back we did some coverage about toxic prisons. I mean, the toxicity levels inside prison. And it reminded me when you told the story of the chemicals that you were using, quite dangerous chemicals, actually, that you were using inside prison. And also this business about you're either not going to be paid or you're going to be paid like 32 cents or something or the other, reminds me of like the apprenticeship programs that they had post-slavery in the Caribbean region, for example. They were paying former slave holders to participate in an apprenticeship program, which meant you basically were still a slave. The slave master got paid. Like the people who are making money from prisoners are being paid, but then the newly quote unquote emancipated slaves were maybe paid a penny or something like that. It kind of sounds like that kind of setup to me, Darcy.
not only in the Caribbean, I think the narrative is so potent about punishment that it renders the practice of slavery invisible. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think that I should point out, what we're getting ready to have an opportunity to vote on this November, it was years of work.
Darcy, we're going to get to that because I want to find out how y'all did it. But I want to bring Stanley into this discussion now, because Stanley, you're a policy and advocacy strategist. So where did you come into this? You know, how did you get involved with all this?
I'm also formerly incarcerated. I spent a little bit over 22 years in prison.
Wow.
And like Darcy, you know, you're forced to work, you know, and I was everything from the yard crew to the kitchen, you know, various vocations, things of that nature. And it doesn't matter if it's 100 degrees outside or if it's freezing. If you're on the yard crew, you got to go to work, right? If you're in the kitchen, doesn't matter if it's 4 o'clock in the morning, you got to get up and be there at work, right? I've been to some vocations where actually one vocation had to be shut down, kind of to Darcy's point, because we had mold and they finally dealt with it. Whoa. They had to be shut down. It took them a year to clean out all the mold because it was so bad, right? And so the conditions under which we're forced to work, right, is inhumane, right? You know, so prison, my sentence was my punishment. Not free labor, right? When the judge sentenced me, he didn't say, I'm sentencing you to X amount of years plus free labor, right? But they extracted that out of me as a result of the way the Constitution is written.
Yeah, and Stanley, who benefits from this? I mean, it's important for our listeners to know about this, because given the fact that the U.S. is the largest, has the largest prison population in the world, right? And likely, you know, practically all the prisoners are involved in some kind of free or very, very low paid labor. Who are the beneficiaries of all of this? Somebody's making money.
Definitely. And you have a lot of businesses, everything from, you know, doing, you know, some of the chicken farms, although not in California, we produce milk here, right? We produce desks that actually staff legislators' offices, right? So many, we produce glasses in prison. So there's various industries that benefit directly and indirectly from prison labor. And to kind of add to the statistic that you were pointing out, as far as the U.S., you know, having the largest prison population, if California was a country, they would be number two. Right. So that's exactly. So we go U.S. first and California too, as far as incarcerating the most people, you know, in the world. And that's inconceivable.
Yeah. And Dorsey, you on this, because in terms of, you know, folks who are making money out of all of this, but it's not even only the people who are making money, but what a lot of people don't know, like during fire season, for example, you know, that a lot of the folks out there on the front lines, average people may not know that a lot of them are prisoners. And I wonder how much they get paid. And if once they get out, you get a little certificate saying, well, I've been doing firefighting, Stanley, let's say not 22 years like you were inside. I've been doing it for 15 years. So you're going to hire me right now as a firefighter? You know what I'm saying, Dorsey?
No, like, no, but, you know, but like I'm saying, like everybody can point to the firefighters. They're not pointing to are people forced to work in short levees when they're flooding.
That's right.
So it ain't like just a seasonal amount of slavery. It goes full term. It goes all year long. If you don't have a fire, you could still be out cutting brush. You know, you in the event that is flooding and the dike is gonna break, you still out there trying to patch up the dike. So you know, it is a multitude of different things. You know, so like if you go to college and everybody's saying, well, you know, I'm not actually a profiting from slavery. Well, if you're sitting at one of these state-owned desks, you probably should examine where it came from. You know, and probably should do that stuff at the courthouse too, and probably should do that stuff at DMV. You probably should do it in terms of actually who is actually producing labor. And by the way, you know, like we get into a conversation about the prison industrial complex, right? If they couldn't force the labor, whatever complex we have wouldn't be as large.
That's right. You
know, so like that stuff needs to end, because if it doesn't end, we'll think that they'll gobble up our children, gobble up our grandchildren, and gobble up our great-grandchildren. You know, and in some of the arguments we've been having to abolish the current practice of slavery, and I'm very proud of the work that they did, Stanley and everybody else that's been out there fighting this fight, because if everybody else can remove it from the Constitution, what we were doing in the state of California is prohibiting the practice.
Right.
And
Stanley, let me ask you this too, because what happens, let's say, if you say no, I'm not gonna do it. You know, I'm not gonna work for free. I'm not gonna be working for no 32 cents an hour.
Right.
What happens in that kind of situation?
So 32 cents an hour, right, is good. It's good pay.
Good pay. Wow.
Good pay in prison.
That's good pay in prison, right? You got folks making 8 cents an hour. you know, let's clarify that for a second, right? So what happens? is that when folks refuse to participate in this, they go, they get what's called a serious rules violation. And so even though we have the Constitution allowing it, the legislator back in 1941 via Penal Code 2700 actually codified it and made it therefore able. And so they said every able body in prison, in any state prison, will provide as many hours of faithful labor each and every day during his or her term of imprisonment. You know, and so and so if you violate that rule, right, what happens, you get a serious rules violation that's basically equal to whether you're making pruno, whether you're fighting, you're manufacturing weapons. They put all that on the same level. And so you get put on C status. And so as a result of C status, you go from earning good time credits, right, to earning zero credits. You get your family visits taken away. You're limited in being able to access to food and being able to go to canteen and buy food, because the only thing you can buy is hygiene products. You know, they take away a lot of privileges that as a result of you refusing to participate in the slavery, right? And so, you know, they limit you to one phone call a week. And when you think about the necessity and the importance of having family connection and family relations while you were in there, you know, there's a lot of studies that's been done that demonstrate how connection to the family and friends on the outside not only helps a person rehabilitate, but lowers recidivism. But yet, because a person refused to participate in the system, they're actually setting them up for failure. Right. Absolutely. Not only are they punishing them extra while they're in prison, but they're setting them up for failure because they're taking away the one of the most key rehabilitative tools to help a person reenter the society correctly.
Yeah, well, that shows you how much they're really interested in quote unquote rehabilitation. But Dorsey, what I want to do now is actually there's a clip I found on your website of this movement and legal services for prisoners with children, but also the website on this. I want to play some of that because that's some other voices of prisoners who have been impacted by this involuntary servitude / slavery. Jose, can we go to that clip right now? Then we'll continue the conversation.
I had to go to prison, and I was a single parent, and I didn't have a high school diploma when I got to prison, so I was like, can I get my education? I want to go to school. I can't work for good time like everybody else. So they told me no. They told me I had to be 5 years close custody because I had a life without parole sentence. So that meant I couldn't go to school. I couldn't get my high school diploma. I had to do hard labor. I had to mow lawns. I had to go through the trash and recycle, digging in big trash cans, and there was bloody stuff in there, and it was gross, but we had to do it. I could not refuse work because I would be penalized. So I lost my father at that time, and I was mourning my father. But the next day, after the news, after they told me my father passed away, I had to go to work. If I didn't go to work, I would be considered a program failure. I wasn't working for a good time. I wasn't getting my high school diploma. I wasn't doing any of the things that I needed to do so I can set an example for my children. They told me if I didn't work, I would lose rights. I would not be able to visit my children. I would not be able to use the phone. I would have to stay in my room. I couldn't shop canteen. So it's involuntary servitude. There's people who were in there with me, and they were very old, Miss Greenberger, and she had to work, and she didn't have any medications for her arthritis, and she didn't have anything that she needed, and they didn't care. So this is what's happening in our prison systems, and this has to stop.
I did everything from maintenance mechanic to yard maintenance to hair care to working in the print shop to working in different types of labor behind the gates when I was close custody. From the age of 17, I did hair care to yard crew to kitchen to outside yard crew, plant operations, stationary engineer, just any type of job that you could have to run a prison. That's pretty much where they would keep close custodies. Jobs are selected randomly based off of physical, much like in Nazi war camp, when we would be given a physical to determine what type of labor we can do safely. So if you pass a physical, you will 9 times out of 10 be placed in laborious jobs.
Anything else you want to add?
Just that anybody 8 to 80 can get it in the state of California. If you come into the state of California Department of Corrections, as long as you can pass that physical, you will be working in dangerous jobs. I had friends inside that are in their 60s working in dangerous jobs on the docks, moving carts that weigh 2,000 pounds that can easily crush an elderly woman. So I just want people to keep in mind that it isn't always people in optimal health like myself that are inside doing these jobs for decades without pay. It could be your mother or your grandmother or even your baby sister, because I was 17 when I went to prison.
I guess you could say I knew right off the bat that it was a form of slavery, even though I might not have the language at the time. But I knew that if you didn't work, that they would penalize you and that they didn't intend on paying you. If you had a job that did pay, it only paid you pennies on the dollars. I worked in the kitchen once, or a few times. And one time I worked in the kitchen, they had us work what would be considered overtime because it was a lockdown. Certain groups were on lockdown, so the ones that weren't on lockdown were asked to work extra shifts in place of the ones that were on lockdown. However, even though I was only paid pennies, I still felt like I should be paid for the work that I did overtime, and I didn't get anything for it. So I actually filed a grievance, an administrative appeal. I appealed and ran it all the way up as high as I could through their channels, and at every level I was denied, and finally told me that per the Constitution, that it was legal for them to not pay me for the work that I was also required to do.
Yeah, just incredible stories. You know what? This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And we have two guests here, Stanley Thermidor and Dorsey Nunn. We're discussing something that a lot of folks don't know still exists in the United States, involuntary servitude, i.e. slavery, going on inside prisons. But there's been a big victory in California as well as other states. So you're not going to want to go anywhere. We're going to take a short station break. But when we return, I want to find out, what is this ACA 8 in California? And to find out from these two amazing activists how they managed to get that through and what each and every one of us could do. So stay with us. We're going to take a short station break. We'll be right back. Put I around the late great Bob Marley, and he later says, don't hold me up on that bridge. I gotta reach Mount Zion. And I got two guests here that are determined that they're gonna win. All righty. So this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning to 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org. org, and you will be able to hear the show. You can get a free podcast. We're also heard nationwide and worldwide on SoundCloud, and we're very happy about that because we have folks listening on SoundCloud from South Africa to the Middle East to Paris, France, all over the place. And we definitely want them to hear Dorsey Nunn and Stanley Thermidor. So I want to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners now all across California and internationally. I want to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in the UK. They're facing an election coming up, a very contentious election. So we want them to be encouraged by hearing what these men who are former prisoners and who are giving so much leadership to the rest of us when it comes to fighting for our freedom. So we are now discussing that slavery in prison still exists in California and several other states in the U.S. And these two men, our two guests, Dorsey Nunn and Stanley Thermidor, along with their organizations and so many others, are trying to do something about this. So, Dorsey, let's start with you. What is ACA 8?
ACA 8 is essentially legislation that would allow a vote to be cast by the general public on the issue of slavery, on the issue of involuntary servitude. There's a number of different ways in which you can actually wind up as a ballot measure. One is that you can have a signature gatherings, and that would cost millions of dollars in to actually execute something like that. But absent our population and our segment of the population not having millions of dollars, what we'd start to do was a grassroots organizing to move legislation that will allow, if it get passed by the Senate and Assembly, to allow the issue to come up before the voters. That's going to come up, I think, as Proposition 7, and it's going to come up this November. You know, so that's what ACA 8 was, and what it's going to become is Proposition 7. You know,
Proposition 7.
Yes, but am I right, Stanley?
And Stanley, tell us about the significance of this. And after we talk about the significance of this and its impact, I really want to find out how y'all did this. How y'all got, what was it, a vote? I think there were only 33 in the final state Senate vote in California, 33 in favor and 3 against. But Stanley, what's the significance of ACA 8 that's now going to become a proposition?
From the clip that you played, I think the main significance is giving folks autonomy. Right. Instead of making them slaves while and extracting free labor, giving folks autonomy allows them to choose their path of rehabilitation. If they want to do education, then they should be allowed to do that. If they want to go vocation, they should be allowed to do that. If they want to do some self-help groups and self-help classes, they should be allowed to do that. Now, if they want to work, they should be allowed to do that, too. But give them the choice rather than forcing them. And when they refuse, you're punishing them, right? Folks, you know, one of the things we understand just from when you're a child to an adult is how important autonomy is, how important the ability to choose is. When you take a person's right to choose away from them, they don't function well mentally, physically. And so the significance of this is you humanize people and you actually equip them to make better choices through this.
Absolutely. And Dorsey, what about, I mean, this is happening in California, but some other states already have something like this in place, right? I know Alabama is one of them. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Can I get a minute to talk about movement in general? Because it wasn't Alabama that went first. The first person that did it was Colorado. And at the same time, there was three things on the ballot during the year that that I can remember that stands out for me. Colorado abolished, took and removed it out of the Constitution, the Colorado Constitution. The other thing that happened was Desmond Meads was kicking up rocks in Florida, and he passed the right to vote for disenfranchised folks that had felony convictions in Florida. Nor that same year, what he did was to attack not the new Jim Crow, he attacked the old Jim Crow that entitled people to be convicted of serious crime with by only being allowed to be convicted with 10 people as opposed to 12. So he had the unanimous jury verdict. That came out through Florida initially at that same period of time. You know, so like at that same period of time, it wasn't just that particular part of it. We was in Florida fighting for the right to vote in Florida. And what happened was that we moved 1,000 people, formerly incarcerated people, from around the United States into Florida. Within a 2-hour period, we had touched 87,000 people. You know, because like at a certain point, what we're driving is movement. You know, and it's not just, and we're going to do away with, as a strategy, if we're going to do away with the 13th Amendment, it's probably going to take 2/3 of the vote of all the states in the state, in the country. You know, and if that's the case, we bumper them off one at a time because we don't have the kind of money that other people have. You know, and at the same time, some people think that it's okay for us to be enslaved. They just call it punishment, or they call it involuntary servitude, or they call it some other stuff. So like, you know, and I think that it renders it so invisible that when you see people picking up paper on the side of the freeway, you don't ask them if they're a volunteer. It's just okay with you. You know, when you know, like at a certain point, that labor is being induced by coercion. The first time that I ever stopped cussing police out when I went to prison, it was only because I wanted to hold my newborn child. And they told me if I had 6 months, I could have a family visit. That was the first time I stepped across the line without calling them names and spitting at them. You know, that's the coercion. You know, so some point in this mix, how about last June, when everybody else was celebrating Juneteenth and eating barbecue, we was in the process of losing ACA 3. That's what we lost last year. Right? That was in California. So like at a certain point, it's like I've been literally through legal services for prisoners with children and the support of Susan Burden and the New Way of Life. We have spent thousands and thousands of dollars to get it this far.
And we're gonna find out, Darcy, a bit more about how you all went about doing that, because it's incredible. You know, Stanley, one of the things I know of people who are longtime listeners, when we did a lot of coverage of that California prisoner hunger strike, largest hunger strike, I think, I don't know, maybe in the history of the United States or whatever, happened by people who were imprisoned, right? And it seems to me as though the level, Darcy just talked about movement building, the level of organization and movement and leadership, because when we were covering that, the question was, prisoners are doing this across race, by the way, behind bars. What's the excuse for the rest of us that ain't behind bars? You know what I'm saying? Like the labor movement, you know, never saw anything like this. So when you talk about leadership coming from formerly incarcerated people and leadership coming from within the prisons itself, a lot of people are like, Margaret, you know, that's going too far. I don't think so. I really think that, you know, it really behooves us to really pay attention to those movements that are happening inside, and then when people get outside, those movements continuing. So Stanley, I just wanted you to comment on that and maybe start off the conversation on exactly what tactics, what strategies that you all use in a new way of life. And Doris, I want to come back to you too about something you said about kids. So don't let me forget that. But Stanley?
I think it's to Dusty's point about the movement, right? It's a collective of us that have been organizing, that have been educating, that have been meeting with various stakeholders, that have been, I can't tell you how many legislators we've met, especially the past few weeks, because the bill, so ACA 3 was actually 2022. Right. ACA 8 started last year and it was stalled for the longest time. Right. We had to meet with various legislators to educate them on what the bill is and it isn't. Right. That's why it failed in 2022. A different version of it failed in 2022 because there was all this information or misconception about what the bill would do. Right. And so we had to spend a lot of time, which takes money, right, doing all these things, but organizing, getting people to call their legislator, call your assembly member, call your senator. We had a big event back in the end of April, Quest for Democracy, where we had over 70, 80 different organizations from all over California come up to Sacramento. And we went up into their office to advocate, right, about this impact and this injustice. And so that was the strategy. And it's really a lot of it is just the grind, right? Understanding, especially a lot of us, we have that lived experience. And then we left folks back that are still in prison. And so, you know, we have a dedication to see this come to pass. When, you know, a lot of times when you don't have a lived experience, you're kind of disconnected from the relevance or the significance of something, right? But when you yourself experience or you're close to somebody that experiences you and it touches you, then it becomes the matter to you. You know, I remember growing up in New York, right? I'm just going to walk. I see homeless people all over the place. I just walk all over them, right? Because it didn't touch me. Right. So I didn't really care about their plight, you know, but coming out of prison, you know, I was basically essentially homeless and feared that for a couple of years afterwards. And so now I see a homeless person and it moves me. Right. Because that touched me. Right. So various people are touched by the fact of slavery still being in existence. Wow. Even though we don't see it out in society, you know, because we lock people up and we forget about them until they come out, right? Unless you're related, you know. Mm-hmm. And so now and more in America, you know, 1 in 6 people are in some way, shape, or form affected by the criminal justice system, right? And that's a sad number to think, right? When we start talking about 6 degrees of separation, you know, that's the real 6 degrees of separation nowadays. Right, is how many people have been incarcerated in jails and prisons. Go ahead.
Go. No, Dorsey, just before, I want to underscore your point, Stanley, because, I mean, I've had a relative serve time in prison. And when he was in prison, he was able to actually go to school and get his degree, right? So that when he got out, there was a way for him to earn an income and, you know, start his family and everything else. And I'm glad you mentioned who's being touched by it, because it's not only the people who are inside, but Dorsey, your organization, Legal Services for Prisoners with Children, and you mentioned that the one time you went off on the police was something they were going to cut you off from your child. And a lot of people don't realize that a lot of prisoners are mothers, single mothers, the fastest growing population of people going to prison, fathers who are in there who have relationships with their children. and who want to have the relationships with the children. And then you have this mess, $8 an hour, and you're going to be punished and whatnot. They're cutting you
eight
off
cents.
From that.
Eight cents.
It's 8 cents an hour. If $8 an hour, you know, I could have bought my kids something when I came
eight
home.
8 cents, that's right. 8 cents an hour. But Darcy, I'm looking at the clock here too, and I wanted you to talk a little bit about, because Stanley talked about the strategy, and I always have to lift up my sister Susan Burton for a long time, because Susan is one of those folks, she never forgot where she came from. And Stanley, when women come out of prison and they're homeless, they don't have nowhere to go, you have a new way of life there. As a lifeline, you have legal services with prisoners with children as a lifeline. But Darcy, I saw something. Did you all go around using, what do you call it? I don't know how you did it, lights or something, to put messages up on buildings?
It came out of necessity, because we were going to buy the billboards to put up and down Highway 5 and in Bakersfield and every place else. The Billboard Association denied us access. Then what we started to do was get mobile vans to go around. We took out a full-page ad. You know, like in the space that I'm sitting at, I'm sitting in the Carol Strickman room. I was a mediator for the hunger strike. I had an attorney assigned to actually sue them to end long-term solitary confinement. And those people were getting ready to starve themselves to death. And who they saw was the hero, and they modeled that hunger strike after was the Irish Republican Army.
Wow.
You know, so it's like, and by the way, when I went into to prison, I had a third grade education, and Brothers on the Yard taught me how to read.
And all the legal work, legal work that goes on. And I want y'all though quickly to say, for people who are listening right now, I can't advocate. You know what I'm saying? I'm just not allowed to do it. But you all could say what people can do to support this effort. Stanley, let's start with you, and then Darcy. Websites or whatever for your organization.
Right. I was about to say, I'm probably going to say the same thing Darcy's saying. They could go to caslave.com, right? And it'll take you to LSBC's page, and they have a rundown of what the bill is. You can click on a link there. If you're not registered to vote, you need to register to vote. You know, if you know somebody that ain't registered to vote, tell them they need to register to vote and show up to the ballot box, right? Show up to the ballot box. That's really what you got to do, right? Come November 6th, you need to be there or you ain't even got to be at the ballot. Just mail in your ballot, right? Since most people don't go to post stations no more, right? They just mail it in, right? But vote yes. That's what they got to do. They got to vote yes.
But Darcy, you know, I'm glad you said this thing about, because this is a ballot measure, people are going to have to vote. Because there's a lot of discussion now about, you know what, I don't want to go vote. Because people look at voting and maybe just the presidential election and not realizing that there are a lot of really important things like ending slavery in California prisons. So, Darcy, what do you say to people who are hesitant about saying, I ain't going to vote?
It's two groups of people that I can target. I can target the young and I can target the old. For the young, it's your job to end slavery. This is your moment. You ain't gonna have another moment like this for a long time if it don't get done. This is a generational problem, and a lot of young people probably, if you don't wanna vote for Biden, then vote for yourself and vote for slavery, because that's gonna protect your kids. Now, as an older person who's going to actually go to the ballot and you don't want a ballot, this is the first time you get a chance to vote for slavery in the history. And your elders gave you that privilege. So you should do something with it. So in terms of organizing, how about slavery being a moral question? So if you're listening to this station and you got a church group, then how come you don't bring somebody in that can actually talk about how do we end slavery as opposed to just having a piece of barbecue on Juneteenth and just skip your little merry self down the highway when you still got hundreds of thousands of people being enslaved in the state of California, I mean in the United States, probably about 1,800,000, I think it is, across the United States. You know, you could do that. The other thing is that we done got it a long way just on grassroots organizing. At a certain point, when are you going to chip in some money so you could actually make sure your kids, your grandkids, and your great-grandkids won't be subject to this? Because we can't dismantle the prison industrial complex unless we do away with slavery. You know, so like one time they be talking about, oh, we're going to have reparations. Reparations for what if you still have the practice of slavery? You ain't repairing harm. It's thousands of people getting out there still being harmed daily. You know, so at a certain point, what do we get to do? So in the event that you go to our website, if you go to our website, then you can make a contribution, because at a certain point, when we could get this far, I done had 4 employees that had actually turned out in their employment just fighting this issue. So we didn't already spend hundreds of thousands of dollars that didn't come out of anybody's pocket other than the pocket of formerly incarcerated people.
Wow.
So at a certain point.
Give us those websites again, Dorsey.
Could you do it again, Stanley?
The station and the other one again, Stanley.
CASlave.com.
Yeah, okay. That's what, about legal services for prisoners with children?
It's www.prisonerswithchildren.org.
And Stanley, so what about website for a new way of life?
All you have to do is type in a newwayoflife.org and it'll take you to our website.
And if you type in All of Us Anon, it will take you to All of Us Anon. And by the way, I'm not even saying that it's just a statewide problem, because I got a national organization that's operating as All of Us Anon. We got 30 chapters across the United States. To that, we wrote the plank for the formerly incarcerated convicted people and family movement. And we got a strong movement. And this is something that we think that we are doing for the public in general.
Well, you know what, Dorsey? Y'all gonna have to come back and talk about All of Us Are None, because I've been keeping an eye on y'all and the work that you're doing, and it's really a lot more than we can cover in the 30 seconds we got left here. But thank you for bringing that up, and thank you. We're out of time, but Dorsey Nunn, Stanley Thermidor, thank you both so very much. And please continue to keep us posted. Thank you for sending me that thing, Dorsey, so that I know to call you up right away and say, hey, come on and let's discuss this, all right?
And I wrote a book, so you need to get a copy of my book.
Okay.
What Kind of Bird Can't Fly?
Real quick, before you go, tell us the name of your book.
What Kind of Bird Can't Fly?
That's right. Okay, Dorsey Nunn, Stanley Thermidor, thank you all so much.
Thank you for having us, Margaret.
Okay.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you. Today's show produced by me. That's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank Jose Benavides for his help with today's show. Also, Susan Burton for her help. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Stay tuned for more programming on your local Pacifica stations. The Journal of Truth will be back on the air next Tuesday. Thank you for listening, and you all, please stay well and safe.
Born in 1899, Edward Kennedy Ellington ranks as the greatest all-around musical figure. this Thursday, July 11th, from midnight until midnight. WPFW honors Ellington on the occasion of his 125th birth year with Ellington 125, a celebration beyond category. Hi, this is Miyuki. WPFW must move, so we will be raising funds toward that end. Our goal is $15,000, and there are Ellington 125 commemorative gifts available as a thank you gift for your support. You can donate now or anytime on our website. For those that contribute to our relocation fund and are able to donate $125 or more, a special commemorative 125 Ellington thank you gift is described on our website. Help WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Peace. This is Atan Thomas, and you're listening.